Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for UFC Vegas, Brunson versus Holland, with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back again after a week off to bring you UFC on ESPN 21, or the more commonly used UFC Vegas 22, back at the Apex for just another card before the pay-per-view next weekend. And this is a kind of a sleeper of an event. I think this is one for the hardcore fans, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of names here, top to bottom, that have either been promoted recently on Dana White's Contender Series, recently signed, or guys that we might have not seen in the Octagon for a little bit that are getting their return. So I'm very excited to see how this all plays out.
Wow. Breaking news as we're recording here. Rob Font will fight Cody Garbrandt, UFC event May 22nd.
Wow. That's a great fight. Yeah, that's a great way to get this started. A little breaking news. I'm sure it'll be old news by the time we get this up.
That's true.
But to start the card off, we have Julia Avila versus Julia Stolyarenko. I think right now, looking at the line, it's probably appropriately priced, and you might be able to find a little value on the underdog, but we should see Avila roll, so I'm not sure I have a play on this fight.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you've said. I do see Avila being the stronger, more powerful fighter. She's a natural 135er. She's got decent cardio. I'd say the biggest knock on her is she's kind of a fish out of water off of her back. Stolyarenko leaves a lot to be desired. Fought Yana Kuniskaya to a unanimous decision loss. Didn't look great there, but we know how smothering Yana can be. And that's a tough fight for her debut, so that certainly shows what they think of Julia. This is I would say this is honestly more even than maybe the line is showing. That being said, I don't really want to take a flyer on her. I don't know. There's some decent props out there, but nothing that I really feel super confident about. Maybe Avila by decision plus 110.
Sure. Yeah. I guess if, you know, I'm making a pick here, it's going to be Avila, but if this fight gets to the ground, you could definitely see a sub from Stolyarenko. So if you want to take a shot on that, prop was like plus 500 somewhere that I saw it listed at one point, you know.
Honestly, I think that if you like that line of thinking, why not go fight doesn't go to decision plus 130 or even under 2.5 plus 158? So at least you get both sides, because we've seen Avila come out and she smashed Gina Mazzani. I mean, I expect a lot more from Stolyarenko than Mazzani, but we've seen Avila have that power.
All right. Yeah, that's definitely a good way to play both sides. And there could definitely be a lot of action here. You think you're making that play?
Certainly something I'm thinking about. I hate to use the old cliche, I'll wait till weigh-ins. But with women's MMA, I might just hold my cards close to my vest till a little bit later if I get a little
great.
Antsy.
Let's move right along in that case. Bruno Silva versus JP Bayes making his debut off of Contender Series and coming up against pretty weak competition. The line opened huge favorite for JP Bayes, was in the minus 250 range, and, you know, being bet all the way down, it's a lot closer now, and I'm not so sure that you want to hop on, you know, what you might have missed on the line movement early. It seems like it's a much more appropriate line at this point, and given the experience gap, I could definitely see Silva winning. So if you want to take a dog play at this point, that's great. You're still getting dog price. Plus 125 at the latest I saw.
I think Bruno Silva is a live dog in this situation. There's no way around it. We've seen what happens when the UFC is kind of hyping people up, propping people up, trying to give them a quote-unquote easy fight. Because on paper, Silva may look like that. Silva, in his UFC career, has two losses and one no contest. So you think, oh, this guy stinks. In actuality, when you watch his fight against Tajir Ulumbekov, Ulumbekov was supposed to run through him like toilet paper through water. and it did not look like that. I remember having my Tajir ticket, and I was clutching it pretty damn tightly because, especially in that third round, Silva made it really close. Baez is billed as this amazing wrestler, yet in his first Dana White Contender Series matchup, yeah, he suplexed the guy on his head in the first round. But later on, he got out-grappled and finished. So there's a lot to be seen from Baez. If he gets a finish versus Silva, oh yeah, right. He's legit. He's all that. At the very least, I see this fight going to the distance.
Yeah, that's actually could be a little bit of an underrated play, given that Baez hasn't been the decision at all in his career. So looking at, you know, 3 knockout wins, 5 submission wins, 1 knockout loss, 1 submission loss. That's 100% finish rate. I'm sure that's, you know, baked into the line here. So if you look at will the fight go the distance, it actually says yes at minus 146. So
Silva though, 3 of his last 4 fights have went the distance. So
yeah,
and the one that didn't, he got submitted in the third round by Khalid Taha, who's pretty legit.
Yeah, I guess overall I don't really see a play I like here.
No, I would say it's kind of a dog or pass spot, and even still there's better dogs later on the card.
I agree. I'm not ready to pay this price because I did wait on it to do a little tape, and obviously Silva looks much better than a plus 200 dog. So congratulations if you got on him early. You definitely beat the line movement that I didn't get to. But let's get right along here to our next fight. Montel Jackson versus Jesse Schrader. And, you know,
I'm excited for this one. Jesse Schrader is Aaron Carter's boxing coach. I don't even know what to make of that. That guy looks terrible. I really hope he gets some help. and I really don't mean in his fighting game. His face tattoo, what he says in his interviews, like, somebody get Aaron Carter some help. But anyway.
It was funny. He actually reached out to him on like in one of his Instagram posts and was like, oh, you know, if you're looking for a coach or whatever. And then Aaron Carter actually like reached out to him. He's been in Combate. So he actually just lost to Rojo, who fought last week. That was one of the T-Rex celebrations.
I was going to say the only thing he's more well known for other than being Aaron Carter's coach is being trolled on by a T-Rex.
Yeah. So, the line right now,
has blown out.
Minus 820 right now.
So ridiculous. I mean, it was minus 400 or minus 500 just a couple days ago. So, I mean, it's just everybody's parlaying it. It's absolutely ridiculous.
At this point, ridiculous. Yeah, I don't see the value in even adding them to a parlay. The only thing that you might want to look at is if you're thinking method of victory, you know.
I like Jackson in the distance, minus 175, if you're really feeling like a crazy person. Maybe a little sprinkle on Montel by sub, because I believe he doesn't necessarily have one, but I think he's got a black belt. So he's one of those guys that can definitely get the sub, or maybe he has 1 Darce choke on his record.
But yeah, against Kelleher.
By sub, plus 500, if you want to take a giant flyer.
That could definitely be interesting.
It's not the craziest thing. Because you're not going to – you could knock out Strader, but I don't know that Jackson is going to want to stand and bang with Strader, because – that gives him like more of an equal coin flip kind of chance. Why not take the fish, the proverbial fish out of water? Why not, you know, push and test Strader's other skill sets?
Yeah, Jackson's got the good takedown. See, he gets the body locks and trips. So he could definitely just bring him out of his world, like you said. And there could be a finish. I just don't think at this point that there's enough value for me to play any of those options.
Agreement.
Great. So let's get on to the next one, where I actually think I have my first play of the day here. So the breakdown for me in Trevin Giles versus Roman Dolidze comes down to where this fight is going to end up playing out. You know, do you see Giles being able to, you know, box up from distance? You know, he's got very good stats when you look at his distance numbers, and just take into account that he has fought, you know, decent competition so far. But when you see him get taken down and not doing the taking down, things get interesting.
I really do worry about Giles getting taken down, and I'm glad you said that because I'll be quite frank. Giles was maybe a dog that I was looking to play, but yeah, I am quite worried when he gets taken down. Yeah, he has an 80% defense, but against who? He got taken down by James Krause, and when he was taken down, the one out of the four times, he was controlled for over 3 minutes. So that's kind of a problem. That's a glaring problem. That's in a recent fight. You look at the fight against Bevion Lewis. You know, Bevion Lewis was 0-for-6 in the takedown, but that's a guy that's since been cut from the UFC, was probably best against the clinch. Like, he never really got going at all. So I'm not really sure what to even do with that fight. At the end of the day, it's not really the best, any sense of a litmus test for Trevin Giles. This fight against Roman Dolidze will be much more difficult as Dolidze is coming down in weight. I guess he was kind of holding a little bit of extra weight at 205. So he was able to make the cut. I think it's a little weird he's making the cut on short notice. I am a little worried about that. That is a concern of mine. Even if he looks good at weigh-ins, how much did he drain his body?
Yeah, I guess the thing I'm looking most towards in this fight is that Dolidze has shown, you know, high-level grappling in the sense that he knows how to get on top, control, avoid being submitted himself, and then get to a dominant position. I think Alan was a much higher-level grappler than Giles is. I know Giles has a purple belt, but Dolidze, I know we like to laugh at his armbar attempt, but I don't know how many guys his size are even attempting to throw up armbars. So it was interesting. He's got a lot of flexibility in that sense, but his go-to move is the leg lock. And, you know, you could give up positions in that point. So it makes me real sketched out to just play like the money line here. But the one line, if I'm going to play, is Roman Dolidze by submission +430. That's going to be one, not a full unit, but probably a half, and just, you know, get some real opportunity, because if he ends up on top or if he goes for that leg lock, I don't think he's as tough as Alan in that sense. His only two losses are by submission.
I certainly see where you're coming from. For me, I see Giles as somebody that's, really tough, hard to finish, as we've seen in his past fights with James Krause, getting finished, sure, by Mearshart and Zach Cummings by guillotine choke, but in the third round in both of those fights, he's very tough. One of the plays that I do like, if anything, lets me avoid playing either side, like I've kind of been playing both sides of the fence so far. Fight to start round three, -132. I think these guys are tough. I think if it goes to the ground, sure, Dolidze should have the advantage and should be on top of him. Like we've said, I am worried about Giles on the ground, but I think he can defend the choke long enough to not get submitted, you know, to end up in a scramble position to do something, to not get finished early. I don't see Dolidze as a whiz on the ground.
And that's a fair observation. I didn't see him hunting for too many different chokes on Alan, but I just look at his history.
He's no Ronnie Yaya. Like, yes, Dolidze will get the submission, but could. He's certainly live for it. I just, especially when you look back at his history, and he's been submitted by guillotine choke twice, by guys that aren't necessarily the highest level. So,
yeah.
I don't hate it. I don't hate the play at all.
Yeah. So I guess if we're making a pick, I got Dolidze because I think his defensive movement, you know, could be enough if Giles doesn't throw together combos, and if he does, he could get a level change thrown on him. I could just see it happening by control.
Listen, if Roman comes in and he's so much bigger, love it. Like, so I'm really interested to see how that goes, but we should probably
definitely
move along.
So we got Grant Dawson versus Leonardo Santos. You know, this is a decent step up here for Dawson, moving up weight from 145, now 155. Santos has been one of those guys that isn't getting all the opportunities to move up the rankings, but he gets plenty of opportunities to face these top-level prospects, and he hasn't really let down so far. He hasn't lost in the UFC at this point. He does have a draw on his record. But the things that are most impressive to me is that for a guy coming in with a fourth-degree black belt in jiu-jitsu, his stand-up actually is what is making me think about him in this fight.
I certainly can see where you're coming from. I've seen Santos's power. That counter right is super impressive. The biggest problem I see for Santos here is his age and his cardio. There's no secret that later on in the fight, his cardio really starts to slip. The Bogatov fight, he got kicked in the nuts like, what was it, two or three
it
times?
It was so bad.
And Bogatov was immediately cut after, got deducted points twice. I mean, I've never seen anything so ridiculous. So he wins the fight. I would, again, another place where I would really like to be on the dog here, but I see Dawson as a dominant young fighter who's probably moving into a weight class that actually better suits his body and better suits, where he's growing, as opposed to like diminishing himself any further at the weight class he was at. He really has dominant wrestling and grappling and will look to grind on Santos. And while Santos could really make it a close fight for those first couple rounds, I can see Dawson's cardio and continuing to wear on Santos to be a problem. That being said, Dawson on the feet has left me with a little to be desired in terms of some improvement in his striking game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, the only play I'm really looking at making, I don't think that Grant Dawson is going to get submitted. I would be very surprised. That would, be something that would have to come from some type of club and sub type of scenario. So if you're looking at Leonardo Santos by knockout plus 700, that could be interesting, because I don't want to play him at plus 188. I feel like everyone's been moving the line a little bit. I don't feel comfortable on either side on the money line, because there doesn't seem to be much value. Because I agree with you, I do think Dawson has this, but if it stays in the stand-up and Santos is able to stuff takedowns like he's been able to do in the past, I could definitely see a little action happening in the stand-up, and that's where Dawson's only, losses come by knockout. It wasn't like a takedown scenario, but that he's not beyond being hurt.
Nobody in the octagon is beyond getting hurt. I would say that, similar to what we were worried about with Giles, Santos, sure, he's got good takedown defense, but if he gets taken down, even though he's a black belt, when he's on his back, he doesn't do enough. Somebody like Dawson, who could end up being the bigger, stronger, more aggressive fighter with better cardio, getting with a better game plan with James Krause, he could really end up grinding him out. All he needs is one, I think. And that's a problem.
Yeah, and you have to take into account the age that Santos is coming in. He's 41 now, is it?
Each fight with Santos, we have to worry how much he's going to age fight to fight. And with a fighter like Dawson, we have to consider, because he's so young, how much he's going to get better, how much he's going to improve from fight to fight at age 27. That's the age that you are growing, learning, training. I mean, he is essentially entering his prime, 27, 28, 29. Oh, my God. He has his best fight years ahead of him. So if he wants to dominate at this weight class, this is a win that he needs.
Yeah, I want to see him make that step up. So I'm not going to be placing a bet on Dawson, even though I really like how he looks as a prospect. And, I'm willing to pick him straight up, though. I will say that. But the plus 700 prop that I'm looking at is, just for a little bit of how the fight could play out. And we'll see how it goes.
I guess I should throw out a little play. Nothing too crazy. Dawson by decision plus 125. Like I said, I'm not sure that he gets the finish. Maybe if you want to be crazy, Dawson by finish in the third round. Like I'm thinking the cardio issues. But sometimes there's a round grouping. You can do Dawson by round three or decision minus 110. Yep, so that's an interesting one.
All right, yeah, because I'll tell you, I would definitely just pick Dawson straight up. I just don't want to put my money on it. So getting to the next fight here, we have Mario Renault and Macy Chasson, and this is another one I'll just say straight up off the bat. I don't really see much value in placing a bet on it due to a lot of unknowns here.
I really like Marion Renault here. Again, another older fighter with low output that we kind of get worried about, but I really see this very, very similarly to the Alexis Davis, Sabrina Mazo fight. Chazon's fought nobody. I mean, who has she fought, really? I mean, she's fought Shayna Young. She lost to Lena Landsberg, and Lena Landsberg took her down like twice. And Lena Landsberg's a kickboxer. So you're trying to tell me that her best win is versus Cheesecake Sarah Morris, or her win versus Gina Mazzani? That's her best win?
I don't disagree with that. I think like when you start looking at the other intangibles, it's tough to really feel
great. I know, but so. So let me put it the other way. If you put Macy Chasson against her last three losses, Renault's last three losses, Pennington, Kunitskaya, or Kat Zingano, how do we think that goes, honestly, for Macy Chasson from what we've seen?
Probably not great, but we have talked about younger fighters making improvements.
And then when you also consider the fact that the fight was rescheduled because Renault had COVID, that can be certainly very scary. And something that would want to take you off of it. That being said, I said that again. Marion Renault is a gym teacher, like at a school. So she's like pretty active quite often. She finds time to train as well. I don't know. There's just something here that's really, really striking me to play the dog. There's something that's really striking me to play the dog. You can get Renault by decision plus 370. I think that's so juicy. You can get the fight to go to distance minus 156. I think that's a fair price.
Yeah. I see, you know, Chasson is just so big and powerful, and you know, in the physical department, you know,
skinny little tree, take her down, grind her out, push her up against the fence.
Yeah, I
just, as long as you keep it, not even necessarily, just as long as you don't keep it at a super long striking kickboxing range. I honestly think Marion Renault has the boxing advantage. I just think she doesn't have the advantage at distance.
Yeah, I just don't see the output. It doesn't make me feel good to bet on an aging fighter with low output that has just shown time and time again to come up short in certain spots. And Chasson still has a lot to learn, you know?
You know who that sounds like? That sounds like Alexis Davis, an aging fighter with low output that had come up short in a bunch of spots. If that sounds like Alexis Davis, that was Alexis Davis. So, I mean, obviously fights are different. Matchups make everything. I'm not trying to sound ignorant. And you were the one that loved Alexis Davis as well. So I don't want to steer anything. There's obviously something that you really don't like in this fight. So I don't want to draw conclusions where there aren't any to be drawn, or, you know, connect the dots where they shouldn't be connected.
If I was going to place a bet on the money line, which I'm not, it would be on Renault. But I don't feel comfortable enough just given these extra factors to actually make the play on it.
100%. I understand. And that's actually probably better.
Yeah. And so the next fight, we get into here would be Tai Tuivasa and Harry Hunsucker. And this was a newly, you know, rebooked fight for Tuivasa here. Doesn't seem like he's going to run into much trouble against a guy that just lost recently on Contender Series.
Yeah, Henry Hunsucker, as we saw when he was on the Contender Series, is not even a true heavyweight. I mean, right? He weighed in barely at the limit, right? And what was he, like 230 or 240 or something?
Yeah, he just didn't.
It looked like he was just kind of bulky. He's like a bulked up light heavyweight. Like he should fight light heavyweight, but just doesn't.
Yeah, the lines are opening up, and maybe you want to play under 1.5 or 2 of Asa first round. I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of inherent value on those plays.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I haven't seen any props come up, as you've said. I do like Tai Tuivasa. I do like him by finish. I do like him by finish early. I think my favorite prop, if I can get it, is kind of that round prop grouping, if they have that. Tai Tuivasa round 1 or 2, probably have it at some mitigated odds. So I'd be interested to see what that number is, if it's not too crazy.
Yeah, we'll see. So it sounds like we're both picking Tuivasa, and, you know, good on Hunsucker if he gets the win here. We're not playing him. 100%. Kenan Song versus Max Griffin. A matchup that, you know, seeing Song come off a little bit of a layoff here. He seems to have been trying to make some strides in his cardio and really rounding out his complete MMA game, because Max Griffin is going to be a very difficult opponent as far as a complete stylistic matchup here. You know, I could see Song maybe with the counter at some point. You know, it makes the dog price not that interesting, though, because once you start breaking down the entirety of their MMA games, you see that the favorite's priced that way for a reason. I just don't know that there's actually value on the money line.
I actually like Griffin here a bit, and I'll tell you why. Griffin is somebody that's kind of been a little bit of an unlucky fighter when you look at his record. You know, the split decision to Alex Oliveira, you know, essentially that means one judge gave him the fight. Tough decision versus Alex Morono, where he kind of came on in that third round, right? He beat Zalim Imadiyev, who's, you know, not necessarily the best UFC fighter, but, you know, you get it done. He knocked Brahimaj's ear off. I mean, that was one of the most vile, disgusting, insane, crazy things I have ever seen. I mean, my God. I don't know what happened with that. Does anybody know?
Yeah, but he was piecing him up way before that, using his footwork to avoid takedowns. And every time they got in the clinch, like even for half a second, he's pushing off and using his footwork to get away. His cardio has come along.
Extremely well said. Extremely well said. So here's the thing with Song Kanan. How often do you find somebody signed into the UFC off of 2 losses? So he has 2 losses, and then they have a card in China, Bisping versus Gastelum. Bisping's retirement fight, takes it on 3-4 weeks notice after getting finished by GSP just to get a big check. And they need, you know, a local fighter in the area, so they sign this guy. And he wins a couple fights. He beats Bobby Nash and Hector Aldana. So they keep him around. But I don't think that he's anybody that good. Who's he beaten? Derek Krantz and Callum Potter. Potter no longer with the promotion. Krantz, is he any longer with the promotion? I know Hector Aldana and Bobby Nash are no longer with the promotion.
Yeah, it seems like they're building up an international prospect, and he's running into someone that probably, you know, could keep on moving up the ranks here. Max Griffin, he's got a much better MMA game, like I said. I just don't know that -198. That I don't want to necessarily play that straight up. I'm trying to stay away from parlaying too much. And like you said, what were you looking at there?
I do like Max Griffin here, and I think Max Griffin by decision +120 is a fair play. I think Song Kanan is tough. We've seen him get finished
to the body before by Israel Adesanya and by Brad Riddell. So I would look out for that. But that being said, Max Griffin isn't the kind of crazy finisher that those two are. Other than ripping off Brahimaj's ear, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He had 7 straight fights go to decision. So I think that that's fair. I think Griffin should be in command for most of this fight as he continues to use his footwork and his developing training.
Yeah, I think ultimately the thing that's keeping me from making like a full play on this fight, maybe I make a degenerate play on the side here, you know, I sometimes can't help myself, but ultimately I do think that there is a live option on Sung to get a knockout with that counter right. It's powerful, and Griffin has been shown to, you know, not keep his guard up sometimes when he's throwing a combo. And while his chin is held up, sometimes those guys that take a lot of punches and don't go down, you know, it just makes me nervous to really want to make that play.
He's held up to Cowboy Oliveira. He's held up to Mike Perry. He's held up to Thiago Alves. He's held up to Eluzio Dolesky.
Yeah, Brahimaj touched him too.
Touched him, it's a fight. Yeah. He wasn't hurt. He wasn't rocked. He didn't get dropped. He's hittable. He's hittable because he's not an elite fighter. That's why he works on his circling and his footwork
so
now.
You're telling me he's not an elite fighter, so it just makes me uncomfortable to talk about a guy at minus 198 like that and feel comfortable playing it with the inconsistency.
I'm just not sure that Song Kanaan is even UFC caliber.
I do think he's a little bit slow, but I think he makes up for it in his toughness and boxing ability. And I think he's going to be someone that's making some improvements. He is still on the younger side. 31 years old, Griffin at 35, Griffin 4-6 in his UFC career. Just a lot of up and downs for a guy that's priced at to win this fight 66% of the time. It sketches me out.
Listen, this is not a hill that I want to die on. If Song has any path to victory, it's by knockout.
I mean, listen, circling, who am I picking? It's Griffin, definitely. I'm not sure I'm going to make the play. Sounds like you got one, and I'll be rooting for you on it because I do think that is the most likely scenario of what happens. Our next fight, we got another up-and-comer here, Adrian Yanez versus Gustavo Lopez, a very tough fighter that I think is going to be someone who comes out and fights for your money. And we've seen Yanez extended. We've seen him go 5 rounds before. We've seen him in, you know, some really great fights for him where he just outclasses his opponent. Is this a classic case of a contender series guy kind of getting caught by someone that's not necessarily the sexy name? And I do halfway say that because if you look at Gustavo Lopez's Instagram account, he goes out of his way to try to be the sexy guy. And it's hilarious. He's wearing the robe with like the model. Like, oh my God, that was pretty funny.
Nobody tries harder than Colby Covington, but that's for another day.
It actually turned me off to wanting to bet Gustavo at first, seeing like kind of a couple of posts on his Instagram. But like overall, I think he's more of like one of those goofy, harmless guys in that sense. And like, it seems like he showed up, you know, with like a mindset. And when you see him fight Merab and some of those positions that he gets out of, some of the skills he shows on the mat, I think offensively, this could be a serious problem if Yanez isn't able to stuff the takedowns and use his movement. Smaller cage could get interesting here.
And that's one thing that Yanez, for as great as he's looked, and he has looked fantastic, we don't know how great he is at takedown defense because we haven't really seen a fighter that's really looking to do that. We haven't seen a fighter that really wants to kick his leg off, punish him, make it so he can't plant and throw those really awesome technical strikes, make it so he can't, come in and out of distance and switch it up on his opponents. From what I saw from Yanez, he did kind of struggle when in the clinch. He did kind of get pushed up against the clinch, was able to kind of reverse out, but then got pushed back in by Victor Rodriguez early in that fight. which, by the way, Victor Rodriguez, I mean, from Alaska FC or whatever. I mean, come on. He's a scrub. He's not fighting anybody. He has a loss to Miles Johns, who's decent, and Domingo Pilarte, who is better than me at MMA, and I guess we'll leave it at that. I don't know. What I saw from Gustavo Lopez, wow, I was so impressed with that Anthony Burchak win. I mean, he came out there, I mean, lit him up with combos, took him down, or actually dropped him, and finished him with a rear naked choke. I mean, that was super, super impressive. So while Gustavo, I do think, is a live dog here, I am not sure I can pull the trigger.
I don't blame you, because I've shown some hesitancy on some other plays. I just, some stuff really stood out to me, and I can't help it. I'll be putting a play. Gustavo Lopez is going to be one of my bets here, plus 168. I think it could get, you know, really interesting as the fight gets extended for Yanez. I know Lopez might not have the best gas tank, but I do like his chances if he's fighting on the offensive rather than being taken down himself and expending energy in a defensive manner like against Merab. And I don't think Yanez presents those exact problems in this matchup. He's gonna be presented problems with those hands. he needs to close the distance, because he will get touched if he's not careful and if he tries to play the distance game. But I like the underdog here.
Who do we think has the better cardio overall? Because I would worry that maybe Yanez can pull away later in the later rounds, which would make me want to, like, put a sprinkle on Yanez by decision plus 350. I feel like as a giant favorite and a fight that possibly doesn't get finished, why not have a little sprinkle on, like, a very possible outcome with your most possible winner at decent odds?
Yeah, I think one of the things that was interesting to me at first, you know, fight goes to decision plus 170, but Gustavo's got a couple knockout losses, so if I'm going to ride, you know, oh, let's fade the hype of Yanez getting all these knockouts and contender series, and you could say, oh, well, maybe he wins this one by decision. You know, if, like you said, the plus 350, or if you say, oh, this fight might be tough, it's going to be real close to go the distance plus 170. I'm going to take my chance on the dog here.
To your point, though, his only two losses are by split decision. Why not? This is not a third split decision loss for him. You know what I mean? I think either way, I think you should hedge. I would play maybe fight to go the distance.
Our next fight, we have a lot of uncertainty. A couple fighters making their debut: Cheyenne Baez versus Montserrat Conejo Ruiz. I don't see any value on the money line. The only interesting ideas might be to look at some props for inside the distance or not. I'm not going to say I feel comfortable, you know, picking the underdog here, because Baez just seems to be much more well-rounded on the feet and a better athlete, and actually has a size advantage here. Like, I think she's got a better chance than JP to get the win, but I don't find any value myself on
this. I don't think that the line is saying that Cheyenne is better than JP. I think it's really saying that Cheyenne's opponent is worse than JP's opponent. That's truly what I think the line is saying. I do expect Cheyenne to get it done. There, from what I've seen, there is no value on even really any props in this fight. The only value I saw on props was for the Ruiz side. Ruiz by decision plus 600, Ruiz by sub, which is what she's going to be looking for, by plus 1200. I mean, that's insane. Sure, is it possible? But I am not putting my money on it personally, guys and gals, seriously. Not where I'm putting my money. I will be circling Baez, but that's the only place I saw any value.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we should, you know, spend any more time. It seems pretty straightforward. Let's get to the co-main event, because this actually might be my most confident play of the day here. We have Gregor Gillespie coming off a long layoff. You know, we're talking pre-COVID since the last time he fought versus Brad Riddell. City Kickboxing, you know, one of their phenoms, actually, you know, has been doing all right so far in the UFC. And then in his transition to MMA, you know, all these guys from City Kickboxing coming from, you know, either Muay Thai, you know, he has trained at Tiger Muay Thai before, played rugby. You know, Riddell's got a great chin on him, but eminently beatable, 59-10 kickboxing record, 0-1 in boxing. So it's not like he hasn't taken his lumps. He does have his first loss by submission in mixed martial arts already was by submission. I think we might be able to see something similar here against Gillespie.
I definitely think it's possible. Gillespie is not only a world-class wrestler. Wrestling was his first love and his true love. The only reason he didn't stay a wrestler is because Jordan Burroughs is in his weight class. And if anybody knows anything about wrestling, Jordan Burroughs is an absolute phenom. So he transitions to MMA, has fairly good success at it, is billed as a Khabib-type guy, gets absolutely dismantled by Kevin Lee, breaks his jaw, takes some time off. I do really like Gregor Gillespie here, probably my favorite play of the night, or at least one of them. I am worried about him getting the finish because I'm worried still about how tentative he might be from getting his jaw broken. Sure, he's been training hard, but psychologically, still co-main event. You know, I wonder where he's at mentally. So I know he did sound really good in the interviews. I liked a lot of the things he said. It seems like he put that loss behind him. I'm not necessarily worried about that. But you can still be kind of gun-shy. So it makes me maybe lean towards Gillespie by decision, plus 240. Riddell is somebody that's so dang tough. It's one of the things that makes him so exciting and almost one of the reasons why when the fight got booked, I'm like, ooh, I like Riddell here. And then I dug a little bit deeper. I'm like, he's got no chance keeping the fight standing. But his stand-up is really good, and he's tough as nails. So that might be where I lean.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to play the underdog, you have to do it by knockout because I just don't see how he's going to win 15 minutes or 7.5 minutes against Gillespie because you're talking about a four-time All-American, Division I NCAA. He holds, you know, his school record for the most career wins. He has 7 takedowns per 15 minutes in the octagon, so it's not like it doesn't transfer over. A lot of these guys that don't use their wrestling, when you watch the Kevin Lee fight, I mean, Kevin Lee had a huge reach advantage and additionally was squatted down in his stance the entire time to dissuade the takedown. You know, he really was low center of gravity. You saw Gillespie go for really just one level change and he saw he had no good entry and he peels right out.
He's not my favorite fighter personally, but I got to give a man props. He is certainly athletic, powerful, and an unbelievable wrestler in his own right.
Yeah, and like you said, the interviews, you know, Gillespie gave him his full credit. He sounded really good, and I do think that it's very possible you could see a submission here if he's able to get it to the mat and really wear Riddell out. You know, you saw Magomed Mustafayev really able to grapple Riddell, take him down 8 times. I know there wasn't enough control in the long run because he gets knocked down in the first minute of that fight. You have to imagine he's pretty compromised after that as far as really being able to control him. But Riddell's still giving up takedown after takedown. And when he goes to get up every time, he's tripoding, giving up the back, and he makes it really available. So you could see him give up the back, maybe get rolled into an arm triangle, depending on if he gives up the rear naked in the hooks or if he gets turned over, you know, trying to avoid that position. So I could definitely see Gillespie, you know, like you said, maybe taking it slow. But if Riddell can't prove to get him out of those positions at plus 220 or by points is plus 240. So if you feel real comfortable either way, do it. But I'm just going to go with the money line minus 225. That's, that's playable in a position where I just think he can win in every which direction that this fight stays, just because of his threat to wrestle that can change how the striking plays out.
You can also split the baby, as I'm looking here. Gregor Gillespie, submission or points, double chance, minus 150. So I don't think he's knocking out Riddell. So you're just kind of removing that from the equation, and you're taking about 75 cents of off your money line. And it's like the same thing. So
yeah, the only threat would be is if he gets him in a compromising position on the ground and really gets the ground and pound working. I do agree. I don't necessarily think he's going to be able to land a standing knockout on Riddell. And it probably would be interesting to have to get to that point. But on a position that I feel like this strongly about with him like this, you know, you might want to think about parlaying with Montel Jackson, whatever. Sometimes, like, I feel like in a spot like this, it might just be about throwing down a nice big bet, you know, right on Gillespie.
I agree. I do really like Gillespie. He's certainly one of our stronger plays.
Let's move along to our main event of the evening here.
I'm so excited about this main event. Derek Brunson versus Kevin Holland. Anybody that beats Derek Brunson is really kind of considered like the best of the best, right? I mean, they kind of are the who's who of the middleweight division. Whereas Kevin Holland, the most active fighter in 2020, everybody's breakout fighter of the year, 5-0 in 2020, four finishes. I mean, three finishes? He looked incredible nonetheless with his capstone finish of Jacare Souza that absolutely broke my heart. But geez Louise, was that KO devastating.
His soul left his body, and good on Mark Smith for getting in there like before too much damage happened. But Jacare did not look good after that. And you have to respect what Holland did, especially getting up off his back in that scramble. And really also creating big problems once he got put on his back. But you look at Jacare Souza, was giving up 9 inches of reach in that fight, and he's still able to get inside and take down Holland a couple times. And we've seen that when you have a very large reach advantage, that offensive grappling could be very difficult to pass over those long limbs. You're dealing with the elbows from the bottom. In this fight, you know, Kevin Holland, the 81-inch reach, and Derek Brunson, 77-inch, that's half of the reach disadvantage that Jacare had. And we've seen Brunson packs a lot of power. So you could really see him get inside here and force the clinch. And our biggest question is Holland going to have the power to put out Brunson in the first round, or is he going to get, you know, weighed down on for a little bit here? And
more breaking news. Khabib is officially done, says Dana White. And now Michael Chandler will face Charles Oliveira at UFC 262 for the lightweight belt. May 15th.
Oh, wow. That's some breaking news right there. I mean, come on. Whoever thought Khabib was coming back. If you actually paid attention to how all that played out, you're silly. I mean, look at how fat that dude got. He's so happy. Let him be happy. Come on.
He has so many things to continue to do. If he wants to come back like GSP for one fight and one crazy opportunity, he may. But he certainly let him retire now. Let the lightweight division move on. Let the purest matchup happen. Nobody wants to fight Charles Oliveira. So let Michael Chandler do it. I love it. I really love that. And now you can book Poirier McGregor. Wow. Let them make their money in July or August or whenever the fuck they want to. It doesn't even matter because the lightweight division is not in a logjam anymore. I'm so excited for this matchup.
Wow. So now that we got past that breaking news, and yeah, it's kind of cool to be able to react to something like that on here because we don't necessarily get that too often. But, you know, getting right back to our main event here. Yeah, it really does come down to if Holland's ready for that step up. He's been talking a lot, obviously. We know that that's part of his game. And I think at the end of the day here, he might be looking a few steps ahead, and Brunson could really be that vet lesson. And maybe I'm leaning back a little bit too much to my Shabazzian fade, but I do think that Brunson has this new mindset working with Henry Hooft, and I really see a patient guy that's better with his defensive footwork and counters. And
100% full agreement. Another thing that I love to do, fade the public narrative. Narrative loves Kevin Holland. There, he's everybody's hot button topic. He's everybody's favorite thing to talk about right now. I get the better, more experienced fighter with more paths to victory at dog odds. Gimme, gimme, gimme. I love it. He's fought the best of the best. Israel Adesanya, Anderson Silva, Robert Whittaker, Yoel Romero, Jacare when he was really Jacare. I mean, there's a lot of things to really, right. really like about Derek Brunson. Sure, you may call him a gatekeeper, but he is the, I don't know, he's the best version that you could possibly be. I mean, he keeps the, I don't know, he keeps the middleweight division safe from imposters. That's what I would say. You're a poser if you can't get through Derek Brunson. And I mean that in the most polite way. And I don't think that Kevin Holland is necessarily a poser, but I don't think that he's ready for main events and title shots for here on out. I think this he bit off a little bit more than he could chew right now.
Go ahead. I'm going to place my second biggest bet of the day. A little bit less money than I'm thinking with Gillespie. Say I put 3 or 4 units on Gillespie. I would put 2 or 3 units on Brunson here. It just seems like the value's there as far as the experience. You know, he's won by 11 knockouts, 4 submissions, 6 decisions. I saw Kevin Holland on the bottom against Darren Stewart. I really didn't like what I saw late. I know he gassed himself out going for the finish on the feet. You know, you can say what you want, but Brunson up to plus 142, plus 150 on DraftKings. I might keep going once you see them at face-off, so don't jump right away unless you see some action going the other way, because the line was actually tighter a little earlier this week.
I mean, Brunson's been in a main event spot before. He's not new to this. I think he's ready for this position. And I think he capitalizes on it. I think he really relishes the opportunity to shut up not only Kevin Holland, but Dana White, the UFC, the trash talkers, all of that. I think he has a lot to prove. I still think he has a chip on his shoulder. And I'm taking Derek Brunson here.
Great.
Money line.
So that just about wraps it up. Just to give you a quick clue about what I was looking to play again, we were looking at the Dalidze sub, Santos knockout. Those are going to be real small plays just on some long shot props. Then we're looking at Gustavo Lopez as an underdog, and we're looking at Derek Brunson as an underdog. And our big favorite of the evening for me is going to be Gregor Gillespie.
Yeah, I really liked Gregor Gillespie. I really like Derek Brunson. I find myself most likely on Tai Tuivasa if I can get that round group prop. I did like Max Griffin, to be quite honest. I might find myself on Marion Renault.
Great.
And that wraps me up pretty comfortably.
Yeah, so get out there, make your play. Let's see the weigh-ins. Should be fun. I always like to see how people look coming in. But I'm just excited to get these fights going because we're going to learn a lot about the division.
This actually is a pretty decent card compared to the two that we had sandwiched between UFC 259. Those cards were garbage. Last week's card was so disappointing. This week's card hopefully is much, much better and much more satisfying. Next week's card, UFC 260. Do not miss that. Make sure you tune in. Make sure you tune in. Tell your friends. Tell your grandma. Tell everybody. Chronic Combat Conversations coming to a town near you. Please make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and throw our videos a like at Chronic Combat Conversations. Check out our podcast on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, tell us what you think. Follow us at Chronic Combat on Twitter for any additional updates. You can follow my amazing partner, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And you can follow me, the_MMA Guru, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.